We're going to look at a chapter that I think, if I remember correctly, and I'm getting where I don't remember correctly all the time, but I think we looked at this not long ago. But my heart has been somewhat exercised about this chapter because I think it becomes more important for us as believers as time progresses. I think that there are lessons here, there are truths here that become much more important as the culture around us collapses, as there is a general falling away among those who profess to be believers and the churches of our land, and as the government becomes more invasive about what it is okay to believe and what it's not okay to believe and what it's okay to do and what it's not okay to do and what it's okay to teach and what it's not okay to teach, I think that this chapter becomes increasingly more important to us the further we go. So let's read it. It's familiar to us, but let's read it. It doesn't take just a moment, beginning at verse 1. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be throughout the whole kingdom, and over them three presidents, of whom Daniel was one, to whom these satraps should give account so that the king might suffer no loss. Then this Daniel became distinguished above all the other presidents and satraps because an excellent spirit was in him. And the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. Then the presidents and the satraps sought to find a ground for complaint against Daniel with regard to the kingdom, but they could find no ground for complaint or any fault because he was faithful and no error or fault was found in him. Then these men said, "We shall not find any ground for complaint against this Daniel unless we find it in connection with the law of his God." Then these presidents and satraps came by agreement to the king and said to him, "O King Darius, live forever. All the presidents of the kingdom, the prefects and the satraps and the counselors and the governors are agreed that the king should establish an ordinance and enforce an injunction that whoever makes petition to any god or man for 30 days except to you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the injunction and sign the document so that it cannot be changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be revoked." Therefore, King Darius signed the document and the injunction. When Daniel knew that the document had been signed, he went to his house, where he had windows in his upper chamber open toward Jerusalem. He got down on his knees three times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he had done previously. Then these men came by agreement and found Daniel making petition and plea before his God. And then they came near and said before the king concerning the injunction, "O king, did you not sign an injunction that anyone who makes petition to any god or man within 30 days, except to you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions?" And the king answered and said, "The thing stands fast according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be revoked." Then they answered and said before the king, "Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or the injunction you have signed, but makes his petition three times a day." Then the king, when he heard these words, was very much distressed, set his mind to deliver Daniel, and he labored till the sun went down to rescue him. Then these men came by agreement to the king and said to the king, "Know, O king, that it is a law of the Medes and Persians that no injunction or ordinance that the king establishes can be changed." Then the king commanded, and Daniel was brought and cast into the den of lions. And the king declared to Daniel, "May your God, whom you serve continually, deliver you." And a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet and with the signet of his lords, that nothing might be changed concerning Daniel. Then the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting, and no diversions were brought to him, and sleep fled from him. Then at the break of day, the king arose and went in haste to the den of lions. As he came near to the den where Daniel was, he cried out in a tone of anguish. And the king declared to Daniel, "O Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions. And then Daniel said to the king, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lion's mouth, and his angel shut the lion's mouth, and they have not harmed me because I was found blameless before him, and also before you, O king, I have done no harm. Then the king was exceedingly glad and commanded that Daniel be taken up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no kind of harm was found on him because he had trusted in his God. And the king commanded, and those men who had maliciously accused Daniel were brought and cast into the den of lions, they and their children and their wives. And before they reached the bottom of the den, the lions overpowered them and broke their bones in pieces. Then King Darius wrote to all the peoples and nations and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. I make a decree that in all my royal dominion, people are to tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, enduring forever. His kingdom shall never be destroyed, and his dominion shall be to the end. He delivers and rescues. He works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth. He who has saved Daniel from the power of the lions. So this Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. We'll stop there. And of course, that's a familiar chapter to us. And for most of us, it's probably been a familiar chapter to us since we were children. Most of us probably had this taught to us in Sunday school, probably had it taught to us in Bible school. But it's a great chapter, and it's a great chapter about a great man. He's a great man in the proper sense. He's not a great man in some worldly sense, but he's a great man in the sense of the kind of man that he was before God and the way that God used him and the way that God worked his purposes through this man's life. And he, to me, is one of the great examples, one of the greatest examples in the Bible of something that we see little of today and that we think little of today. He is an example of great character. And when I was a boy, I remember occasionally that there would be someone that my dad or my mom or someone older than me would point out to me and say, there goes a man of character. And, you know, I've thought about that recently in our day that, you know, you don't see that as something that people value anymore. For instance, we value education, but do we value character like we would value education? We value knowledge and we value skill, but do we value character the way that we would value education or the way that we would value knowledge or the way that we would value skill? Character is something that makes everything else that's good about a person better, right? Character is something that will take skill and make the skill to be used properly and in the right manner and in the right fashion. Character is something that will take someone with knowledge and it will cause them to use their knowledge in a way that is proper and right and in a way that's pleasing in the eyes of God and helpful to other men. Character matters, but we live in a day when people no longer think that character matters. We see this in all kinds of different phases of our life. We see it in our politics. I mean, you know, we don't really make that a requirement in the people that we would choose to lead us. You know, well, what about their character? What kind of person are they at their core? We might say, well, look at all the money they've made or look at their accomplishments or look at their oratory or look at their skill, but do we go, but I want to make a decision based upon what I can discern about this person's character. What are they at their core? What are they at the very base of what they are as a person? And you know, you've heard me speak favorable about my dad, and I never want to make people think that Dad was some less than human person. He had faults and blemishes and sins and weaknesses and failures. But I will say one thing about my dad. One thing that I always knew about him was he was a man of character. I had a man tell me one time, your dad would drive across the county. If he thought he owed you a dime, he would drive across the county to make sure that he was doing right by you and that if he owed you something, he would want to always make it right. He was, you know, and in my view as a child, it just seemed that, you know, Dad has some character about him, and his word meant something, and the way that he lived his life was in a particular manner. And he was, in my opinion, not a perfect man, but he was a man of character. And, you know, we just live in a day where there's a lack of character in so many aspects of life. There's a lack of character in politics. There's a lack of character in the entertainment world. But there's even a lack of character down among us people, right? You know, can you really trust men's word anymore? Can you really depend on men to do what they say? One of the things I hear all the time is you'll be on a job and we'll say, well, I've had 5 people tell me they'll come and do this job, and I've been waiting for 6 months. And they'll tell me they're going to be here tomorrow, but then they never show up. You know, they never do what they say that they're going to do. Or, well, I took this to this mechanic, and I found out later that he charged me for this, and he didn't even do it, you know. Because, those are all character issues, aren't they? They all go to the very root of what we believe about our responsibility to other men. And they all go to the core about what we believe in our responsibility to God. And, you know, if you were to come to me and go, all right, if you were to, you know, make a list of the people in the Bible that display this great character, I think I would probably put Daniel at the top of the list, maybe with Joseph. You know, Joseph was a man of, you know, this great character. But Daniel would probably go to the top of my list. And at this point in Daniel's life in chapter 6, it's late in life. You know, he's not young anymore, but here he is, a man that displays this tremendous character at a crisis hour in his life. By the way, character or the lack thereof is usually proven in a crisis hour in life, right? Character or the lack thereof is usually proven at the dark seasons of life. And here Daniel's character is put to the test. And I thought, you know, because this is going to be increasingly important to believers, especially as time passes, if there's not a revival, if there's not a change in the spiritual temperature of our land, if there's not a change in the hearts of men about the way they view the church or the way they view the gospel, character is going to matter more and more each and every day as we walk a little bit deeper into the difficulty and the darkness that may lay ahead. What we are is going to matter, and it will be revealed always by the times that we're called to live in. So I want us to think just a little bit briefly about the character that this man displayed in this dark hour and difficult hour of his life. First of all, it's a character rooted in his relationship to God. Now, we don't so much, you know, I can't so much prove that from this chapter as much as I could prove it from chapter 1. In chapter 1, we have a record of Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the early days of their being carried away into exile. And the very first thing we're told about Daniel is that Daniel determined that he would not defile himself before God by eating that which it was commanded him to eat by the pagan kings that ruled over him. He wasn't just trying to be difficult. He wasn't just trying to be a problem. He wasn't just trying, you know, say, well, I'm just not going to do what, you know. His reason, we're told plainly, his reason for refusing to eat the king's meat, his reason for, you know, pleading with that one that was placed over him to give him a test to see if not it would be okay, you know, and that he wouldn't endanger himself by allowing them to live by their convictions, his reason for that was rooted in God. The very first thing that we're told about Daniel, the very first thing that we're taught about him, is that it was his relationship to God that made him and moved him in the directions that he moved in life. It was not just that he was a good man, but he was a godly man. Now, we've all known people that we would say, well, that's a good man, or that's a good woman, but they weren't godly, in the sense that the reason that they were good was maybe the way they were raised. But it was not because of any particular relationship that they had to God. And I've known a lot of people like that in my life. A lot of people I was raised around were, I would call them, by, especially by today's standards, I'd say that was a good man or that was a good woman. But it doesn't mean that they were good because they were godly. Doesn't mean they were good because they knew God or they loved God or they sought to please God. They were good because that was the way they were raised to be. They were good because of a good example. They were good because they wanted to honor their parents, or they were good because they wanted to be, you know, a good member of their community or a good member in their society. But the thing that motivated Daniel and the thing that moved Daniel was his relationship to God. It wasn't just that he was, well, here's this man of this, you know, stupendous character, but the thing that really moved him was that he knew God and he loved God and he wanted to obey God and he wanted to honor God. And the reason that there were things that he wouldn't do, and the reason that there were things that he must do, is because of his relationship to God. So his character was rooted in God. It wasn't just something separate from his relationship to God, his knowledge of God, his, you know, commitment to God. It was connected to his relationship to God. It wasn't separate from. And, you know, that's the real character. Because, listen, character other than that type of character can dissipate under pressure, right? Character other than that type of character can be dissuaded, can be, you know, it can lessen because it has no real foundation. Because it can, you know, if you're just good because you were always raised to be good, what about when everybody around you isn't good anymore because they were raised to be good? But if it's rooted in God, there's things I will not do because of God, there's things that I must do because of God, that's a whole different matter altogether, because that goes to the very core of wise living and good character. Number two, this man displayed a character that was developed and deepened over a lifetime. As I said a moment ago, by this time he's an older man. And, you know, in chapter one, he's a young man. He's carried away into exile. By this time he's an older man, and he hasn't changed for the worse. His life has been deepened. His life has been developed. He's older, but he's stronger. I think it's probably fair to say he's probably weaker physically, but he's stronger spiritually, because his life has been developed and his life has been deepened over time. And that's the way our life should be. He's been consistent for a long time. He's been true and he's been faithful. And in the eyes of God, he's been trustworthy, and he's been one that has experienced the trials of life, and yet he's remained faithful and true to God. And over time, his life has been developed and his life has been deepened. And I think that there's a truth in this, that what we might not be strong enough at, that we might not be strong enough for at 25, through the grace and training of God, we may be strong enough to stand up under at 65 or at 55. Because, you know, even though our outward man is, you know, perishing, our inward man is being renewed day by day. Our life should be being developed. That which might collapse us at 25 shouldn't collapse us at 55 or 65, because of the work that God is doing in our lives and our development in spiritual maturity and our development in character. And I don't want to get worse as I get older. I don't want to get weaker spiritually as I get older. I want to get stronger, more solid, more faithful, more stable, more true to God. Number three. He manifests a character that was developed in less than ideal circumstances. He lived his whole adult life in exile, right? He was, at a young age, he was taken away from home, taken away from family, and taken away from his religion. And yet he was able to bloom in a desert spiritually. He was able to, you know, he lived his whole life in exile. His whole adult life was lived in exile. He was taken when he was young, and throughout the course of his life, he lived it in exile, away from home, away from his homeland, away from his religion. And yet he stands out before us as this man, this godly man of solid and substantial character. And yet he didn't have any of the privileges that many of those who lived before him had, who walked away from God into idolatry. So he manifests this character in less than ideal circumstances, which gives the lie to the belief that, well, if everything's right around me, then I'll turn out right. And if everything's wrong around me, that's my excuse for not doing right. It gives the lie to that. Because this man grew in spiritual strength in a place that was less than ideal. He wasn't in Jerusalem. He wasn't in Judah. He wasn't in his homeland. He was in exile. And yet he bloomed spiritually in what would have probably appeared to him at times in a spiritual desert. Number four, his character distinguished him from other people. We're told in verse 3, this Daniel became distinguished above all the other presidents and satraps because an excellent spirit was in him. It set him apart. He was not unique because of physical appearance. He was not unique just because of his nationality or race. But he was different and unique. He was distinguished by the kind of man that he was and the way that he lived life. Now, this is one of the great themes about the biographical elements of the book of Daniel. Everything we read about him is that he just was such a godly and good man that he stood out. Much like Joseph, right? Who the exact same thing is taught to us about. Now, he did this without self-promotion. He wasn't promoting himself. He was unique in a dark and sinful time, because he wasn't like other people. He was unique in the way that he did business. He was unique in the way that he performed his duties. He was unique in the sense that he was godly and righteous when all around him was ungodliness and unrighteousness. His character distinguished him from other people. He was different for the right reasons. He was unique for the right reasons and in the right way. Number five, his character brought about blessing and advancement in his life. Another thing we find out about Daniel is that throughout the course of his life, and it's witnessed here in this chapter, in verse 3, the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom because of the fact that there was an excellent spirit in him. It opened doors for him. It, just like it did for Joseph, right? The character of Joseph opened doors for him. Anywhere you put Joseph, he just seemed to rise above it, right? He was taken as a slave and he became basically the master of the slaveholder's house, taking care of all of his affairs and property, until he was wrongfully accused, and then he goes to prison or jail and he ends up there taking care of all the affairs of the jail, because, you know, even pagans can look and say there's something special about this individual and I can trust them with my stuff. And we're told in the story of Joseph that it was evident that whatever he did was blessed by God. And even the pagans in Egypt could recognize there's something about this man. It'd be better for me to let him run my stuff, because, you know, obviously everything he touches has the touch of blessing upon it. This is kind of the way Daniel was. His character opened doors for him. Doors of opportunity, doors of responsibility, doors of service, doors of influence, doors of blessing. And even pagans can recognize the utility of this. And character, especially godly character, is, even though we'll talk about this in a minute, they may not value the godly part of your character. They may value other blessings that come because you are a person of character. For instance, if you have a business and you have two people to choose between who you're going to set over that business to see to its affairs, to make sure that you're not taken advantage of and that the business is run wisely, would you rather have the alcoholic, lying character who cheats on his wife, or would you rather have the Christian who loves his family, goes to church every Sunday, and he's never lied to you? Well, that's a no-brainer for me. You say, but I'm not a Christian. You go, well, I can put up with his Christianity if he's taking care of my affairs in the way that I know he will. It opens doors. And Daniel's character opened doors and brought blessing. Number six, his character also brought upon him jealousy and hatred. That's another element of it. These other satraps and these other presidents, when they discovered that the king intended to possibly place Daniel over the whole kingdom, well, they were jealous, which is human nature, right? And they hated him. But they hated him for no reason. There was no cause for their hatred. They sought to harm him, but they had no right to, and they had no reason to. And I think the reason that is that the life of a godly person is often a rebuke. It's often a rebuke. Sometimes people hate a good and godly person that God has placed around them for no other reason than that they're everything that they're not and they know they ought to be. It's a rebuke. It convicts. It's like light coming in and showing the darkness. And Daniel's character, I mean, there's no record that Daniel had wronged any of these people, that he'd harmed any of these people, that he had done anything but good in regards to the king. And yet these men are jealous of him and they hate him and they seek and hatch a scheme to do him harm, real harm, not play harm. I'm talking kill him harm for no reason. Other than he's everything we're not. His character was beyond, and I love this about it, his character was beyond honest accusation. In other words, they even not acknowledge, what can we say about him? That's true, right? What kind of accusation can we make against him? They could find no ground for complaint or any fault because he was faithful and no error or fault was found in him. How many humans could that be said about? I mean, hardly any. So they have to hatch a scheme rooted in manipulation and deceit to harm him because they knew that there was no ground for honest accusation. They knew that there was nothing true that could be used against him. He was faithful, and so consistent that even his enemies had to invent a reason, had to invent a cause, had to come up with a scheme, a deceit, a lie. And let that be the case. May we live lives with the help of God that are beyond honest accusation. And if the accusations come, may they be dishonest ones. Three more and I'm done. His character was unbending before changing times and laws. The whole world is changing around him. They manipulate the king and get a law passed The times are a-changing, as they used to sing back years ago. But not Daniel. His character was something that was not bending to the waves of the age. The wind of the times did not bend him and change him. You know, he didn't say, well, I've got to change with the times, which is things we hear now, right? Well, we've got to change with the times. A lot of churches are trying that. We've got to change with the times. A lot of preachers are trying that. We've got to change with the times. I mean, but the problem is that the things that we say we believe are rooted in an unchanging God, right? And that was the ground upon which Daniel stood. Yeah, the laws changed, but I can't because God hasn't. I mean, that was essentially, you know, the whole issue. The times were changing, but Daniel didn't change the suit to times because he was anchored to something bigger than opinion or bigger than just the beliefs of men. He was anchored to the living God who never changes. So his reasons and motivations were rooted in an unchanging God. So when the law changes, he just doesn't change with the times. He doesn't change because, not because he's trying to be difficult either, but because he can't. Because he really believes what he believes. And he really is what he is. Right? His character was undaunted by the threat of punishment. He knew that the decree had been given that if anybody bowed and prayed to any god or asked any petition of any god other than the king, that they were to be cast into the den of lions. And I love this, verse 10. Daniel knew that the document had been signed. He went to his house where he had his windows to his upper chamber open toward Jerusalem. He didn't even shut the shades. He got down on his knees three times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he had done previously. This wasn't something that was just something new to cause trouble. He wasn't a revolutionary. He was a child of God. It was his practice to pray and to seek the face of God. It was his practice to kneel and face toward Jerusalem and to pray. The law changed, but he couldn't because he was moored and anchored to the unchanging God. That's real character. He's like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who were told that they had to bow when the music was played to the image that the king had made. And they said, you know, no, we can't do that. We can't do that. Well, they're going to throw you into a burning, fiery furnace. Well, our God that we serve is able to deliver us. But either way, it's up to him. Either way, we're not bowing to your image. The modern Christian needs to look himself in the mirror and go, is there anything that's non-negotiable anymore? The modern pastor needs to look into the mirror and look himself in the face and go, is there anything that I'm willing to suffer for? Is there anything that I would be willing to die for? Is there any element of biblical truth that is just non-negotiable, and whatever it costs me, so let it be? But as Martin Luther said, here I stand. His character was undaunted by the threat of punishment. Threats and punishment didn't change his mind, and it didn't collapse his character. Then lastly, his character, in the end, was vindicated by God. He didn't know when he was put in the den of lions whether or not it was God's plan to let the lions devour him or whether it was God's plan to send an angel and deliver him. But either way, his mind was made up and his heart was set because devotion to God was non-negotiable. And it just so happened that in God's plan and purposes, he sent an angel to shut the lion's mouth. And the next morning, Daniel and his convictions were vindicated to the glory of God and to the destruction of his enemies. And God may do that for his people. Or he may let his people perish and trust him in the midst, like a, you know, Stephen being stoned. But either way, it's in the hands of God. But God will vindicate his people, if not in this life, in the day to come. God will vindicate his people and their confidence in him. And God will vindicate a person who does the right thing for the right reasons. Right? So, you know, may God have mercy on us and raise up people like this again. Men, women, old people, young people. May he fill our churches with such solid, substantial, real people. By God's gracious work. Let's pray. Father, we love you. We love your word. We love the example that you've borne to us of this man's life. And we know that he was what he was because of you. We know that he was a sinner, but he was a sinner who had been graciously worked upon by your Spirit and by your word. Lord, raise up such today as we face what may in time prove to be very difficult times for the church. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.